We learn to pay the rent. Yes, I learned to forget your face. The scent of your skin lingering like a shadow on a memory. And those strangers we meet, is it you? My highest love, my highest love, my highest love. Will we recall? My highest love, my highest love, my highest love. Oh, oh, I say we all lose faith sometimes, go hanging by a thread for most of our lives, and then we start to see. Yes, we start to see. You won't.
WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. All right, this morning, we're going to have a birthday edition. The end of the show is going to be a request from my favorite listener. But the previous two shows, I've had a little bit of technical difficulties with the story Cora Plummer. So I'm going to try and make some amends to that, because it kind of drives me nuts that the show hasn't really been that particular show. Cora Plummer Quincy has not been aired fully. So if we recall that the ends have been cut off for technical reasons. But I think what we're going to do is going to give you a little refresher. It had been 6 years since Brett Ponsett had last been through Petersville. He arrived in town late and during a God-fearing thunderstorm to see if Doc Early could look at his wrist that he'd injured branding cattle elsewhere. Brett is immediately recognized by his revolver. The now 21-year-old Carl Plummer reintroduces himself to Brett, and Brett learns from Carl that his father Ned has since died. Brett had been an acquaintance of Ned Plummer, and knew that Carl had also been the lone survivor of the three Plummer children, so it was understandable to Brett that Carl was distraught about his mother Cora remarrying only after 10 months. Carl asked Brett if he had ever heard of the man, Oliver Quincy, his new stepfather and supposed large ranch holder in Elk Point, New Mexico. Carl's suspicions are inflamed when Brett can't recollect having heard of Quincy Ranch in New Mexico. Later on in Act 1, Brett learns from Doc Early that others in town are suspicious too of Cora Plummer's new betrothed. In fact, the sheriff has ridden over to Elk Point to extradite a prisoner back to Petersville. And while he is there, he will investigate further this Oliver Quincy. We will join in at the conclusion of Act 1 while Britt is having supper.
There you are, mister.
Oh, thanks.
Looks like you're going to have trouble cutting it. What's wrong with your hand?
It's nothing serious. It's just a sprain. I guess maybe I should have ordered something I could spoon through.
Want me to slice up the meat for you?
No, I'll manage. I just get this thumb out of here. I'll be all right.
Well, if you want anything, just holler.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Miss. I don't know why they give me the toughest steak in the whole kitchen. For 35 cents, you think you should have been...
Howdy, Britt.
Oh, hello, Doc. Were you eating here, too, tonight?
No, Britt, I was looking for you.
For me? What?
Cal Plummer just come riding into town, says his ma's been shot.
Been shot? Cora?
That's what Cal says. He don't think it's too serious, but I'm going out the ranch now to see what I can do for her.
Oh, of course, sure.
Cal told me to bring you along.
Me? What for?
I don't know. He just told me to find you for good and bring you.
You did, huh? That's funny.
Well, Britt, you coming or not?
Well, I sure don't see where I figure in this thing, but if Cal wants me, I...
Sorry to drag you away from your supper.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right, Doc. I'm afraid I was fighting a losing battle with that steak anyhow.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. Every day, every one of us Americans has the satisfaction of knowing that right now, we enjoy the highest standard of living in all history. And we've only begun, for it's a fact that our standard of living will rise still higher. And while we've made ourselves stronger economically, we've retained all of our basic freedoms. We work where we choose, we bargain collectively, contract our own affairs, and profit from our inventiveness and enterprise. That's the American economic system, and I'm for it. I'm sure you are, too. So let's keep things that way, friends, all of us. Now, Act 2 of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
The Plummer Ranch was about half our ride east of Petersville. Real big outfit, too. Maybe, 50 square miles grazing land and all. The main ranch house just off the road was built to size. Two stories tall with giant big windows faced out. I remember hearing folks tell how Ned Plummer had to send all the way up to Chicago to get glass big enough for those windows. There was a couple of lamps burning somewhere on the first floor. You could see the little lights spilling through the draperies. And the rest of the place was dark. Oh, boy. And we left our horses in the yard, Doc and I. And he grabbed his satchel with the medical instruments, and we walked up to the carved mahogany door, the front door.
Just a minute. Yes? Doc Early.
Evening.
Just what can I do for you, Doctor?
Well, Cal said that Ms. Plummer... Ms. Quincy, your wife, she was hurt somehow.
Oh, I see. Well, it's nothing serious, just a scratch. My gun went off accidentally. A bullet grazed her shoulder. But Cora's perfectly all right now. Matter of fact, I think she's already gone to bed.
Is it, Oliver?
Sounds to me like she's still up.
Well, I, I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah.
Oliver?
It's a doctor, dear, and,
My name's Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
Britt Ponsett?
That's right. That's right, Mr. Quincy.
Well, I suppose you might as well come in, Doctor. Mr. Ponsett?
Hi, yo.
This way. I told him it was only a scratch, dear. But as long as Dr. Early rode way out here, I suppose he might as well have a look at you. Just to be on the safe side.
Hello, Cora.
Britt. Why, what are you doing in Petersville? When did you get into town?
This afternoon. Didn't Cal tell you?
Well, no.
It must have slipped his mind.
Good evening, Cora. Let me see here.
Now, Doc, you shouldn't be troubling over me. I'm all right, really.
Well, of course you are, my dear. Of course you are. Bullet barely grazed his skin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid the good doctor doesn't approve of my bandage.
No. It's perfectly satisfactory. At least it appears to be. I'd like to take it off, though, make certain there's no danger of infection. You mind stepping in the other room, Cora?
Well,
Go ahead, my dear. Go ahead.
I'll see you before you leave, Britt.
Oh, sure. I'll wait around till the doc finishes up.
Nice of you to ride out to Dr. Early, Mr. Ponsett. I imagine he appreciates having the company.
Well, it wasn't his idea, Mr. Quincy.
Oh?
Cal asked him to bring me along.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon that makes us even. Whereabouts is he, anyway?
Calvin? I don't know. He hasn't been here all evening.
He wasn't around when the shooting took place.
It was not a shooting, Mr. Ponsett. It was an accident.
Well, whatever it was.
And Calvin was not here. I met up with him while I was riding into town to get the doctor, and he offered to save me the trip.
Oh, I guess I was under the impression you said Cora didn't need a doctor.
No, she doesn't. But at first, I didn't know how serious the wound might be. Then, when I got back to the house, I saw it didn't amount to anything.
Uh-huh.
And by the time you and Dr. Early showed up, I'd forgotten the whole thing. That's why I was surprised to see you. For a moment, I couldn't think what you wanted.
Your gun just happened to go off, huh?
I was going to clean it. I thought it was empty. I guess I don't know too much about firearms.
What make do you carry?
He
doesn't carry any make, but I do.
I hadn't seen Cal come out of the front hall, so I didn't know how long he'd been standing there. He was holding a .45, using it to cover his stepfather. The gun wasn't moving either. Cal's hand was as steady as his eyes. Steady and cold and determined. It wasn't the first time I'd seen a man with a look like that on his face. Now, not a killer's look exactly, at least not the look of somebody who wants to kill. More like somebody who hasn't got any choice.
I was wondering how you'd lie out of it, Quincy. The kind of story you'd tell. You weren't very convincing either, considering all the practice you've had.
Hey, Calvin, listen to me. I know how you feel.
You haven't got the slightest notion how I feel. If you did, you'd have left town like I told you a couple of hours ago.
Now, take it easy, Cal.
I gave him warning, Britt. I gave him fair warning. I said I'd kill him if he didn't get out and stay out for good.
I don't know what it is he's got against me, Mr. Ponsett. I suppose I don't measure up to his
measure
father.
Measure up to him? I ought to kill you for even comparing yourself. Well, are you going or not, Quincy? Because if you're not, this time Ma ain't here to get in the way.
Was that what happened before? Is that how she got shot up?
It was his fault. He's got her so mixed up, she doesn't see anything straight. She thinks he's fond of her, the way she is of him. When she saw the gun, she ran forward, yelling and screaming. The way she grabbed my hand, that's what made it go off. I never meant to fire. Least of all, I never meant to hit Ma.
But your Ma's all right, Calvin. The bullet hardly touched her.
I don't believe... Is that true, Mr. Punk?
That's right, Cal. Car's fine. Doc Early's in there now, just making certain.
All right, Quincy. Start moving before she comes back.
Now, hold on. Hold on a minute here, now. This isn't any way to settle things. He's your mother's husband. She's got a right to know what's going on.
You think I want her to know what a liar he is? That he never cared for you? You think I want to break her heart?
Well, what are you talking about, Calvin? I never lied to Cora. Never in my life.
And where's that big ranch you're supposed to own and all the money you're supposed to have?
What?
Tell Mr. Ponsett about your holdings. He's been to Elk Point. And there ain't no Quincy Ranch.
Oh, you're not making any sense, Calvin.
I ain't gonna stand around here arguing.
Put that away, Cal.
Not until he leaves. He gives me his word he won't be back. And if he don't keep his word...
Cal?
You don't figure in this, Mr. Ponsett.
You got me out here. It was my idea.
Well, nobody's keeping.
This bandage isn't on my gun hand, Cal.
He got you fooled into being on his side, too.
I didn't say that.
Look, ain't there nobody that sees him for what he really is? All he's trying to do is to get his hands on what my father left. Dad worked hard. All his life he worked hard. And when he was dying, he told me to look after Ma. Told me it was my job. Well, I'm going to do my job, Mr. Ponsett. And nobody...
Calvin, you made enough trouble for one night.
I'm sorry, Ma. Didn't want you to be here. Didn't want you to find out.
Found out what? My son turned into a lunatic?
I'm only doing it for you, Ma.
For me? Do you think you're helping me by carrying on like this? I've got my own life to live, Calvin. You've got to let me live it as I see best.
Ma, he's no good. I was trying to get him to leave before Sheriff Jay comes back from Roswell, before the whole thing came out. Well, I guess it's too late now. I guess you'll have to know.
Know what?
He hasn't got a ranch. He ain't got any money.
Oh.
If you don't believe me, ask Britt Ponsett. He only married you because of what Pa left you.
No, all I said that I didn't know of any Quincy Ranch near El Point. That's all I said. I haven't been around there for a couple of years. Maybe by now.
Well, there ain't no such ranch now either. Is there, Quincy?
Well, no, of course not.
There but... you see, Ma.
Calvin, listen to me.
He's admitting it, Ma. Why don't you face facts? Everybody else has been on to him. Everybody but you.
It's all my fault. I should have told you in the first place. I know that Oliver isn't rich. I never thought he was.
You never thought...
Ma? Well, maybe Doc and I'd better get
no.
Huh?
No, I'd like you to stay, Britt. Calvin is right about one thing, though. I've been making a fool of myself. What's worse, I've been making a fool of Oliver, too.
Now, Cora.
You see, Calvin, I've known Oliver for a long time. Your father and I, well, we were all friends back in Kansas. All three of them. Of course, that was before I married your dad.
You've known each other all these years?
Once, Oliver asked me to marry him. But I chose your father. And I've never been sorry I made that choice. I guess you know that, Ollie.
Well, sure, Cora.
But after Ned died, well, it was like part of me had died, too. And I felt all hollow and useless, lonesome. Not a very romantic way of putting it. Lonesome, but that's how I felt. Like I couldn't go on by myself. Oh, you did your best, son, to keep me from thinking about your father and about myself. But it wasn't enough. And I kept remembering what your father said when he first took sick, and he knew he wasn't going to get well. He said he'd take it as a compliment if I was to marry again, that it would mean our marriage had been a good one. But more than that, I think he knew I wasn't the kind to live alone. So I wrote to Oliver, asked him to come out to Petersville just for a visit. And then... Well, getting married was my idea.
Your idea, Cora?
Ollie was afraid of what folks would think. Me having this ranch and him not worth very much. He was afraid they'd get the idea he was marrying me because of the money. So I told everybody that he had a ranch of his own, even bigger than mine.
Boy, Cora.
Oh, I was just trying to make it easier on him, Britt, so he wouldn't be embarrassed, uncomfortable. Oliver didn't know what I was up to.
You shouldn't have done it, Cora.
I'm sorry, Ollie. But I'm not sorry I married you.
Oh, Mark.
You've got to understand, Calvin. It's true, I'm an old lady and a foolish one. And it's true, I don't feel the same way toward Oliver that I felt toward your father. We only feel that once in a lifetime. And some folks aren't even that lucky. But it's better for me not to be alone the time that's left. I think it's better for Oliver, too.
You should have told me, Mom.
Yes. Yes, I see that now. But I wasn't sure how you'd take it. Too bad you were dragged into this, Brett. You and Doc. I wanted you to hear it all before you left.
Sure, Cora.
You knew Ned. You were a good friend of his. He thought a lot of you.
Oh, I sure hope so.
Oh, what would he think? How would he feel about my marrying again?
Oh, it's pretty hard to speak for somebody else, Cora. But Ned loved you. That was plain to everybody. So I guess he'd want you to be happy and content. That's what Ned would want.
Thanks, Brent.
Well, Doc, hey, it's about time we're getting back to town, isn't it? After that, I guess Cal and Oliver started hitting it off real well. Anyway, the last time I was through Petersville, folks were all talking about how much Oliver Quincy had done for the Plummer Ranch. Practically doubled the size of the herd, and now he was building a house down on the south pasture for Cal to live in when he got married. As for Sheriff Jay's story about Oliver not owning any property around Elk Point, well, the people just wouldn't believe that, that's all. The sheriff just hadn't done enough checking, that's all. Man like Oliver Quincy, why, he just had to be rich. He was written all over it.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burtz and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Virginia Gregg and Gene Tatum, Robert Griffin, Parley Bear, and Bert Holland. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
It's only the third attempt to conclude Cora Plummer Quincy. The original air date for that was the 27th of December, 1953. But you've heard it here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and WMFO.org for a third consecutive week.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Now, we're running a little bit ahead of schedule this morning because I started that with a little synopsis of Act 1, well, that being Cora Plummer Quincy, and concluding with Act Two. I'm going to break the mold here. Instead of going with a shadow or followed up by another six shooter, I'm going to play a birthday request, as I indicated at the beginning of the show. It's my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Henry. And he's been asking me to play the Green Hornet. We really don't know too much about the Green Hornet just yet. But I know that the series debuted in January of 1936. And of note, we had Britt Ponsett in the six shooter. And now we're going to deal with Britt Reed. He's, the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reed in the thrilling adventure, Escape for Revenge. The Green Hornet strikes again. And now, the Green Hornet. A burly guard in the state prison walked along death row from the cell where Jack Ludlow, a hardened and unrelenting killer, had been waiting for the fatal march to the death house. The guard stopped before the door to the warden's office.
Come in. What is it, guard?
It's about Ludlow, warden. He's beginning to crack up. Wants to see you right away.
Good. Maybe he's going to confess. I'll go talk to him right now.
Well, that won't do, warden. Ludlow's got less than half an hour left. Wants to talk to you in private. He's begging to be brought here to see you.
If he confesses, it'll be worth it. Take another guard with you. Bring Ludlow here to me.
Yes, sir.
I'll give him 5 minutes.
Okay, keep your gun handy, Joe.
Yeah.
I'll unlock the cell door. Come on, Ludlow. And remember, you got two guns at your back.
I thought I could hold out about this. I just gotta tell him. I can't go without telling
him. Yeah, I know, Ludlow. It's tough. Open the corridor door, Joe.
Sure.
Well, Ludlow, I guess you aren't as tough as you made out to be, are you? Most of them break when the time gets close. Guess you aren't any exception.
Yeah. Guess you're right.
Here's the warden's office. It's about a knock.
Come in.
Here he is, warden.
Well, let's have it. I'll give you 5 minutes, Ludlow.
You two men can stand guard just outside the door there.
Maybe one of us ought to stay here.
He's unarmed. He couldn't get out except through that door. It's all right. Wait outside.
Gee. Thanks, Warden.
Come on, Doyle.
Now, Ludlow, sit down if you want to. Tell me what's on your mind.
Hey, I'm restless, Warden. Being cooped up in that cell.
Yes, I know. What does he want to tell me?
Hey, I understand my old man came in to talk to you tonight, Warden.
Yes? Yes, he did, Ludlow. Felt sorry for him. Seemed such a respectable old chap, and... Well, your trouble broke him up quite a bit. Wanted to ask me about certain arrangements.
Yeah, I know. But get me buried.
Sure that isn't what you came to speak about, Ludlow.
No. I came to see you about this.
A gun? Where'd you get that?
That nice old man stuck it in this big fern over here, Warden. Just so's it'd be handy.
You won't get away with this, Ludlow.
Get your hands up quick. Now, walk to that door and stand to one side of it. Get going. I'm keeping this gun right in your back. One slip means it goes off, see? I open the door a crack and tell those guys to go to the end of the corridor. Tell them you're walking back to the cell with me. Go on.
All right. But I warn you,
Do what I say.
Guys!
What else, Warden?
Go to the end of the corridor and watch from there. I'm walking back with Ludlow.
Okay, Warden. Come on, Doyle.
All right. Now saunter out beside me. When we get to the corridor leading to the main gate, we'll go that way. If they start to follow, tell them to go back. Now on your way.
You think I'm going to let you get away with
this?
I
gotta die if I don't get out. You'll die too, Warden. I ain't kidding. Turn this way.
Hey, Warden, anything wrong?
This gun is ready to go off, Warden.
It's all right, guard.
That's the stuff, Warden. We're coming to the main gate. Keep it up and you won't be sorry.
Out! Oh, it's you, Warden.
Tell him to open that gate.
Open the gate, guard.
There you are, Warden. I was... Hey, isn't that Ludlow with you?
What's... Grab him, it's a break!
Holy mackerel!
How you want?
So long, Warden!
Prison break! Sound the alarm!
Meantime, Britt Reed, young publisher of the Daily Sentinel, was in the city room talking to Gunnigan, the city editor.
Everything ready to roll, Gunnigan?
Yes, Chief. Ludlow was slated to go to the chair at midnight. It's 5 after now. City room.
Gunnigan, this is Mike Axford.
Say, you, it's about time you phoned in. All the other papers will be on the street
before... Hold on, will you? I just gave a story to rewrite. Then I had them connect me with you. Wait till you hear what happened.
I ain't got the time to listen. I got...
Ludlow ain't dead yet.
Huh? What are they doing, frying the guy? What do you mean? What happened?
He got away, made a jailbreak, busted out of prison. Now do you get it?
What?
That's right. You can get the details in the rewrite desk. See you later. So long.
Hey, wait! That calls for an extra.
What's happened?
That was Axford. He phoned that Ludlow busted out of prison. Come on, Chief. We've got work to do.
The following afternoon, Britt Reed was going over letters with his secretary, Lenore Case, in his office.
Answer this one in your own way, Miss Case.
Yes, sir. Well, this is the last batch, so I'll get them all out today.
Good. Mail was beginning to stack up.
Hi, Reed, Candy.
What brought you in, Axford?
I came to tell you about that killer, Ludlow. Reed, maybe you forgot, but when Ludlow was sentenced, he swore he'd get even with the prosecuting attorney and with the guy who was responsible for his capture.
I do remember, Axford.
Well, who was responsible for his capture?
The Green Hornet, that's who. Ludlow swore to get the lawyer, Calvin York, and the Green Hornet.
He might get Calvin York, but the Hornet? Oh, no, that could never happen.
Maybe not. but he sure has York upset. Sergeant Burke has a cop posted out there at York's place to protect him.
I think the Hornet can take care of himself. And as for Calvin York, as long as the police are guarding him, he'll be safe from Ludlow.
Sure, that killer wouldn't dare show his face there. If they catch him again, he won't escape the chair, you can bet on that. Well, I'm going out to eat. Then I'll go to cop's headquarters. See you later.
That night, in another part of the city...
Weezy, they don't come any smarter than Jack Ludlow, if I do say so myself. My little plan worked out to a T.
Yeah, Jack, we sure put it over on him at the prison. You know, I should have been actor the way I played the sad old man. Warden sure fell for it, and I got a good chance to plant the gun for you.
Okay, you did your part, Weezy. I'll pay you off soon as I get my mitts on some dough. I got a couple of things to pull, and then I'll have dough and be even with two skunks besides.
You ain't thinking of going out tonight, are you, Jack? The whole city's hunting for you.
Stop beefing. I can take care of myself. Did you get that mask for me?
Yeah. It's right there in the table drawer in front of you.
I'm gonna need it tonight. There. How do I look, Weezy?
Well, if I ever seen the Green Hornet, I'd say you look like him. But I never seen the Green Hornet, so...
See, you never seen the Green Hornet, okay. But I have. This is a mask like his. Enough to pass for him anyway. People don't look too close when that guy comes around.
What are you going to do?
Look. You said there's a cop watching York's place, didn't you?
Yeah. He was right on the porch when he went by. Big guy, too.
Cop's a cop to me. I can handle him.
Me? I don't want to have to try.
I'm taking this mask and calling on York tonight, Weezy.
What? Oh, you're crazy.
That's what you think.
But what about that cop?
I'll get rid of him. I got something to square with York. If anybody's around when I get to him, he'll swear it was the Hornet who bumped him off. Then the hunt will turn to the Hornet, see?
I don't get how you're going to do it, Jack.
I told you to be sure there was a phone in my hideout, didn't I? Now that there is, I'm going to use it. You just listen and you'll learn how I'm going to do it.
Calvin. Hello?
Is this Calvin York's place?
Yes. This is Mrs. York speaking. Just a moment and
wait, you can take a message for him.
All right. What is the message, please?
I'm calling from police headquarters to tell you Ludlow's been caught.
Oh, that's wonderful. That awful murderer.
Hey, who are you calling? Oh, yeah, Mrs. York. He sure is awful. By the way... Tell the policeman we sent there to come back to headquarters right away, will you?
Yes, of course I'll tell him. Thank you for letting us know about the capture.
It's a pleasure, ma'am. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Who was that, Helen?
Police headquarters. They called to say Ludlow's been captured. Oh, Calvin, I'm so relieved.
Yes, I'm slightly relieved myself. Ludlow's a dangerous killer.
Oh, they want the policeman who is out front to come to headquarters. Will you tell him, dear?
Yes, I'll tell him right away. I'm glad we don't need him anymore. Now we'll have nothing to worry about. Oh, why? I'm about ready to turn in, Helen. 15 minutes ago, I was tense and worried. I guess the letdowns made me sleepy.
Mm-mm. You'd better go up and turn in then, Calvin. After all, the strain has...
What's the matter?
Look, in the doorway.
Hmm? The Green Hornet.
Right. I came to settle a score for a friend of mine, York.
Put down that gun.
Scared, huh? I'm using this gun... on you, York.
No, I won't let you.
Get away from me, you crazy thing.
Helen.
I won't let him hurt you.
Get away, I said.
Why, you dirty...
Okay, York, this is what I came to do.
We'll continue our Green Hornet adventure in just a moment. And now, back to the Green Hornet. Reed was dining in his apartment, and Cato, his faithful Filipino valet, had just brought him the coffee when Axford entered in a high state of excitement.
Reed, where are you?
Here in the dining room, Axford.
Axford, sound excited.
Reed, things are sort of popping. I just came from the Sentinel, and they've already got extras out in the streets.
Well, calm down and tell us what's happened.
Me poor feet. It's good to sit down. Pour me a cup of coffee, Cato.
The place all ready for you, but you not come.
Come on, Axford, what's the news?
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, Reed, it was like this. I was at cops headquarters a while ago. Sarge and me were having a quiet game of checkers and talking a bit.
Okay, Axford. Don't sit there all day. It's your move, so get busy.
Now hold your horses, Sarge. I got dough up in this game, and I ain't to be hurried.
Yeah, a whole nickel. Come on.
Okay, I will. There. Caught you snapping that tight, Sarge. That I did.
Who's here?
Who do you think? Michael Axford, the chap, that's who.
Don't ever get into a game of checkers with him, Moran. He's a crazy player.
Hey, look, you could have made a move there, Sarge.
Where?
There, you see.
Stop kibitzing, Moran, and go on about what you're doing.
Yeah, Moran, you better... Hey!
Huh? What did I do now?
Moran, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be at York's place.
Well, you phoned for me to come back.
What? Who said I phoned?
Mr. York. That is, he said somebody phoned and said Ludlow was caught and for me to...
Holy crow!
It's a trick! Get a squad car, quick, we gotta... Police headquarters. Who? Yes, Mrs. York. What? The Green Hornet, you say? Are you sure? Sure, sure, try to calm yourself. We'll be right out.
What is it, Sarge?
York, he's been murdered by the Green Hornet. Tell the dispatchers to put out a citywide call. Get some of the boys. Get a squad car around front. Get busy, all of you.
And poor Sarge was fit to be tied at the trick the Hornet pulled, Reed.
What makes them think it was the Green Hornet, actually?
Mrs. York saw him. That low-down spalpeen shot her husband right before her eyes. That he did.
I see. Well, I can't understand what motive they attached to the crime, actually.
Well, 'tis as plain as the nose in your face, Reed. That Hornet was in cahoots with Ludlow.
But Ludlow swore vengeance against the Hornet, as I remember.
Sure, but they're both a couple of killers. And birds of a feather run together, you know. They must have fixed things up between them.
Certain Ludlow's mixed up in that murder somehow.
Sure, that's what I said. Well, I'm getting along now. See you later. So long.
Goodbye for a while, Axford.
It's not good. Hornet get blamed for murder of Mr. York.
I'll say it isn't. That must be Ludlow's way of getting even with the Hornet and York at one and the same time.
Well, what you do?
I've been thinking. Ludlow got his revenge on York. Having just broken out of prison, the next thing he'll want and need is money for a getaway. And it stands to reason he'll use the Hornet disguise when he attempts to get that money.
Well, that sounds reasonable. You throw more blame on Green Hornet.
Yes. Moreover, he had help in making his escape from prison. That means another crook is working with him.
What of that?
Crooks like that have no sense of honor. They'll do anything for money. I'm going to call the Sentinel. Have Gunnigan run a box on the front page featuring the large reward we offer for the capture of the Hornet. It might give somebody an idea.
Will you wait here to see if it brings results?
No. After phoning the Sentinel, we'll take the Black Beauty and the masks and drive into the business section of town. If a nibble comes in, we'll catch it over the shortwave radio and the police broadcast it. Then the Green Hornet will be in on the kill. Now for some action.
Rick Reed put through his phone call to the Sentinel. Then, stepping through a secret panel in the bedroom, he and Cato went along a narrow passageway built within the walls of the apartment itself. This passage led to an adjoining building, which fronted on a dark side street. Though supposedly abandoned, this building served as the hiding place for the sleek, super-powered Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet. Rick Reed pressed a button. The great car roared into life. A section of the wall in front raised automatically, then closed as the gleaming Black Beauty sped into the darkness. short time later, Ludlow was in his hideout talking to Wheezy.
Wheezy, we got a problem to solve.
Yeah? Like what, for instance?
With York put away, this town's too hot for us. Got to get out of here as far away as possible. We'd need dough to do it.
Oh, now, look, Jack, I like it here in this burg. I ain't got no reason to blow.
I know. Listen, dope, I'm plenty hot right now, ain't I?
Sure, but then...
And you was the one that sprung me from the pen, right?
Yeah, but nobody knows
that. If I get caught, they'll know soon enough, bud. I ain't taking the rap alone this time.
But you killed a couple of guys. Me, I never did that, Jack.
You're an accessory to the whole thing. That means who I bumped off, you bumped off. It's the way the cops look at it. So when I scram out of this burg, you have to go along. Or else something may happen.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Jack. Why can't I just stay here?
You ain't staying, see? Maybe we'll get some dough tonight. With me wearing a hornet mask.
For the love of Mike, has some sense. With flat feet all over the place, why do you have to...
Because we have to. That enough? Now, look, Wheezy. Got it all figured out. That little movie joint we went to last night. The manager's office is right inside the door off the lobby. I noticed it especially.
But they don't leave any of the dough there after they close up.
We'll grab it before they close up. I saw the manager take a bag of dough in there last night about 11.
But he'll see you. He'll be a witness unless
you... I ain't gonna bump him off. I want a witness. He'll say the hornet stole the dough. Look there, Wheezy. See that headline? Calvin York shot by Green Hornet. I sure got away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
What are you staring at? See something else?
No, nothing interesting. You say you're gonna pull a hole up at 11 o'clock?
Right. You can sit in the car around the corner. We'll get that dough and then blow the town before morning.
Okay. As you say, Jack, I'm going down for some smokes. Want anything?
Nah. Hurry it up. We leave in 5 minutes.
Okay. I'll be right back.
Watch yourself, Wheezy.
Yeah, I will. I'll be seeing you. Hey. I bump off. You bump off, he says. I gotta get from under on this deal. That reward for the hornet will do it. I'll call the cops. Tell them about the movie holdup. They catch Jack Ludlow. Me, I get out from under with a lot of dough for doing it.
Not long after Wheezy left the hideout, the long black car of the dreaded Green Hornet slid in among the shadows of a back street not far from a small movie theater.
We have radio set for police calls, Mr. Britt, but they're not anything come over we hoped for.
I'm still hoping, Cato. After all, I don't know
something
whether...
come on radio now.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars. Green Hornet holding up neighborhood theater at 10th and Water Streets. Theater hold up by Green Hornet at 10th and Water Streets. That is all.
It worked, Cato. I want a showdown with Ludlow. We've got to get there before the police. Step on it.
What the?
Okay, buddy. This is a stick-up.
You're the Green Hornet.
What do you think? Put all that dough back in that bag and hand it over. Hurry.
All right. Only don't shoot.
Get it in the bag now.
Yeah, yes. Yes, sir.
Be sure you don't hold any out on me either.
No, sir. It's all there.
Good. Give me it. Now, lie down on the floor with your face to the wall. If I hear one peep out of you, I'll let you have it. Understand?
Yes.
Then get down like I said. No. So long, punk. Wheezy, quick.
You're not going anyplace, Ludlow.
But you want Wheezy?
Your funny pal's in the back seat, sleeping. I've been waiting for this meeting.
You, that sneaking hornet, huh? You'll be sorry you mixed up my affairs, says you.
Help.
You fool.
Help.
They'll be caught. The cops will come.
Right, and they'll find you, killer.
Now blow your brains out, you...
Not yet, you won't. Close, but not close enough. Take this. And this. And this one for wearing a mask like mine.
Wait. You can have the dough. I'll give you the
dough. I'm giving you this.
No.
To leave here quick.
Must hurry. Crowd gather. Police come.
Get going, Cato. We haven't a moment to lose. The police will know what to do with that killer when they find him. Give it the gas, Cato.
Mike Axford, if I ever have to go through another night like this, hurry up there. You, coffee boy, get to the composing room with our coffee.
Holy snakes, what would... Look, here comes Reed himself.
Yeah, hi, Reed.
What's this I hear about the capture of the Hornet, Axford?
Ask him, Chief. He phoned in here and said that they'd caught the Hornet. I get everything set up and what happens.
What?
He phones back that it isn't the Hornet at all. It was Ludlow posing as the Hornet.
Well, that's big news in itself, Gunnigan.
Sure it is, Reed. That's what I tried to tell him. But he saw it because he had a wee bit of extra work, that's all.
A wee bit of... Oh, I give up.
What's the real news, Axford?
Reed, the cops got a tip that the Hornet was holding up a movie. When they got there, they found Ludlow wearing a mask and laid out flat in the bottom of the front of a car, if you know what I mean.
Well, I guess I follow.
Oh, it'll take him all night, Chief. They got Ludlow. They got his crony, a little mutt named Wheezy, who squealed to high heavens about everything.
Sure. Wheezy said Ludlow posed as the Hornet to kill York. And then
when the cops got to the scene of the holdup, a crowd of people swore that they saw two green Hornets fighting in a car.
Two?
Sure. The real Hornet was fighting Ludlow.
I guess even the green Hornet couldn't stand a low-down heel Ludlow.
I know I despise that killer.
That settles it then. If you despise him, it stands to reason the Green Hornet does too, Reed.
What? What do you mean?
Look at him, Gunnigan. He takes me serious. He doesn't know a bit of sarcastics when he hears it.
Sarcastics, Axford?
Yeah. Did you ever hear the likes of that before, Chief?
Sarcastics. Can I throw it around?
You certainly can, Axford.
And how?
Pepper Entry, Pepper Ludlow caught confesses your killing Green Hornet implicated. Read all about it. Green Hornet still is there. Pepper Entry, Pepper.
Okay, that was Escape for Revenge. The original air date was the 29th of January, 1946. The Green Hornet was created by George Trendle and Fran Stryker out in Detroit, I believe. They were known as well for the Lone Ranger, who is actually Britt Reed's great uncle, I believe. If I read correctly somewhere in my research, Bob Hall plays the Hornet, and obviously Britt Reed. So I have plenty of time left here. I was just going to play another couple of batches of songs to close out the set. I'm going to actually play some music here. The next scheduled grand hour is the 17th of January, and possibly next week I can, if the slot's still available, I'll try and get back on the air. But you're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, WMFO.org as well, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Music, they say, is the only real international language because there are so many varied styles of music. I'll start that again. Music, they say, is the only real international language There are so many varied styles of musical expression which appeal to all levels of society and almost every walk of life. Almost, but not quite. In fact, if there is one particular element of society that has never before been catered for, it's those hard-working people in a world-famous Morse code. I very well remember being on duty as a radio officer in the dreary North Atlantic during the lonely days of World War II aboard the HMS Venus. What I would not have given to have had a special treat like the one you are going to hear in a moment. The song is a familiar one, Night and Day, You Are the One, by Mr. Cole Porter. The treatment, however, is totally unique. The soloist is Mr. Sid Croons of East Finchley, one of our finest Morse code tappers. And he is joined later by the massed Morse code tappers of Portsmouth, Southsea, Brixham Harbour, Worthing and Brighton.